are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
Look, the Moore's boy, the son had a little problem with the drugs, and I was happy to help. But does that mean I wanted the dad to be a senator?
It was your job. Just because you save somebody from a fire and you're a fireman doesn't mean you vote for them.
Of course. No, I didn't want him to be the senator.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, January 3rd, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Suzanne Gordon, author of The Battle for Veterans Healthcare, dispatches from the front lines of policymaking and patient care. Also on the program today, still no war with North Korea. Congratulations. But plenty who still want war with Iran. We're 16 days from a potential government shutdown, and Roy Moore's Jew lawyer turns out to be a Judas. The NSA demoralized and losing staff, and Steve Bannon nudges, kicks Trump's fam under the bus. Michelle Bachmann may rise again. And the Trump administration set to blame blacks for the Russian probe. All this and more on today's Majority Report, ladies and gentlemen. I was so excited, was so happy with myself yesterday that I had remembered that it was 2018. And I thought, okay, I've crossed the threshold. I'm never going to have a problem with that again. And then, of course, today, I could barely say 2018. But again, Happy New Year's. If this, for some odd reason, is the first day that you're joining us in the new year, Happy New Year. I hope yours was healthy and happy and that the rest of the year is both healthy and happy. And once again, just thanks for all the support that you gave us in 2017, particularly towards the end of the year. Got a little bit dicey for a couple of days, and then it worked out very well. And poor Mike Cernatovich had a bit of a breakdown. And, you know, I don't wish ill on anyone. That's not totally true. I mean, I do. Sometimes I do. And I suppose if I was going to wish ill on anybody, it would probably be, he'd be probably pretty high on the list.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. I don't wish ill on anyone and then see it actually come to fruition so quickly, as we saw it with Mike Cernovich. So let me just put that that way. We didn't talk too much about Iran yesterday, and I don't know that we're going to talk too much about it today. There have been widespread pro-government protests in response to the widespread anti-government protests yesterday. The specifics, I mean, there's a lot of different, I think, catalysts for what we're seeing in these protests, not the least of which is economic and the dissonance between expectations as to what would happen after sanctions were rolled back and what has been delivered to the Iranian people. You can check out Michael's show last night. He went into it in greater depth. But one of the things that a moment like this does is it reminds us why we have to be very careful when we are resisting Donald Trump, who we rehabilitate in that cause. Okay, Max Boot, right before a vacation, came out with a piece where he suddenly became aware of the existence of white privilege and that he shouldn't have bought into that whole movement conservatism that he bought into. Look, I don't know the guy. I don't know if it's sincere or not sincere. I don't know if it's opportunistic or whatnot. But the danger is when you, but his portfolio, of course, was foreign policy. And he was an extreme, I don't even want to say apologist, cheerleader for the Eurasian invasion into Iraq. Another one of those guys was Bill Kristol. Bill Kristol also brought us Sarah Palin. So I wonder his level of sincerity about what his problems with Trump are. And here's the problem, is that when you elevate these people because you think that they help in the fight against Donald Trump, and, you know, maybe some people deludedly, in my opinion, think that they help in the fight against Republicans. The problem is they still have this other portfolio, which they like to push. And on MSNBC, Trita Parsi reminds everyone exactly where Bill Kristol stands on the question of Iran.
Let's be more respectful of the Iranian people's desire for freedom.
Well, with all due respect, Bill, you've been arguing to bomb Iran for so long, so I don't know if you're really respecting the Iranian people. You've been advocating killing Iranians, so I don't think you or the Trump administration have the credibility to now say that you care for the Iranian people.
Hold on. It's not about me.
It's about the Iranian people. Do you stand with the Iranian people? Do you stand with the Iranian people against the regime?
Of course I do. That's exactly why.
Okay, good. Fine. We're in agreement.
We're in agreement. A more democratic situation without killing them.
Trita, Bill Kristol is not advocating to kill anyone. Let's make that very clear.
No, on the contrary, there's been all of this argument for taking military action against Iran. So instead of actually having this nuclear deal that has been working.
Ambassador, last word. Bill.
Bill doesn't want last word. I don't want to linger on the fact that When I advocate war, I don't think no one's going to die. I don't know who the bombs are that he's going to send over there. But, you know, we've seen this play out before. So I would just, again, use moments like this to remind yourself why it is problematic to elevate these people. It would be nice if Bill Kristol was a surgical tool that we could use just to sever off, I don't know, four people in Larchmont from voting for Donald Trump or wherever he has some, you know, some suburb in Pennsylvania that might help beat, you know, a congressman there. But there's a lot of baggage that comes with these people.
And just real quick, also this that Stephanie Rule's horrible there, and just the elevating of manners over ethics is just gross.
You know what? I mean, I don't know if she, I mean, she's either doing that or is just not aware of what this guy,
or which is, in my view, almost just as bad.
Well, I'm arguably worse.
Arguably worse.
You know, he's now an MSNBC contributor, and I understand that, you know, people like, but look. People have to, if you're a pundit, you got to own what you've been out there and building your punditry on. That's just the bottom line. Folks, support for today's show comes from Health IQ. Health IQ believes the best way to improve the health of the world is to celebrate the health conscious through social and financial rewards. So they use science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people, including runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. This makes total sense. If you never get into a car accident, your car rates are cheaper. Your car insurance rates are cheaper. This is sort of, I guess, the analog to that. 56% of Health IQ customers save somewhere between 4 and 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ. Physically active people, you may be aware of this, have a 34% lower risk of all-cause mortality, a 56% lower risk of heart disease, and 22% decrease in cancer mortality compared to people who remain inactive. So on top of the fact that you can go to Health IQ and get a discount on your life insurance if you're healthy, it's also a good idea if you want to live longer. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/majority. Or you can call them, mention the promo code MAJORITY when you talk to a Health IQ agent. That's healthiq.com/majority to get your free quote. Again, that's health and then the letters IQ. All right, folks. We're going to get just in a moment to Suzanne Gordon. But just a reminder, this show relies on the support of its members. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. An update on our Amazon link is dead for the time being. We may try and revive it, but they seem not terribly excited about it. But if you go to majoritypreportkickback.com, you can buy through our Jet link, which is on that messy page. We're going to clean that up. We're working on populating our new website, which you can check out at majority.fm, and all part of our launch, our 2018 launch. Here you go. All right, quick break. We'll be right back with Suzanne Gordon on the battle for veterans' health care. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Suzanne Gordon, a healthcare journalist and author of The Battle for Veterans Healthcare. Welcome to the program, Suzanne.
Thank you for having me, Sam.
So I want to start a little bit on somewhat remedial territory, because I'm not sure that people fully appreciate what the Veterans Healthcare Administration is. I mean, just tell us about how encompassing veterans health care is.
So the VHA, the Veterans Health Administration, is the biggest agency within the Department of Veterans Affairs, what is referred to as the VA, and that is three agencies. It's the Veterans Benefit Administration that does all the benefits, the GI Bill, home loans, health care, et cetera. And then there's the National Cemeteries, and then there's the VHA, the Veterans Health Administration. It's the largest health system in the country. It's the only publicly funded, fully integrated healthcare system in the country. And it does not only provide clinical care, but It provides, it does research that benefits us all. Think the shingles vaccine, the nicotine patch, the first implantable cardiac pacemaker. It educates 70% of all doctors and many, many other healthcare professionals, nurses, psychologists, et cetera. So it's a mainstay of the health professional education system, and it responds to emergencies. So in my state, California, the VHA responded in Southern California to the fires and Northern California to the fires by reaching out to all veterans and making sure they had their meds and their oxygen tanks and their mental health appointments and so forth. And it's the most successful healthcare system in the country, in spite of the fact that it has had some problems and still has some problems. There are fundamentally managerial failures.
Okay, hold on. Before we get into the problems, there's still a couple of things I want to unpack there, because I had no idea about the things, like you had mentioned, the nicotine patch and the... How are those things developed through there? And are we getting, is the U.S. government getting a kickback on every nicotine patch that's sold or what?
Oh, no. It's, you know, the U.S. government gives all this research to the public. It's unlike a large pharmaceutical company. I mean, they help develop these devices and medications, and they don't get kickbacks. They give it, you know, to people, and they develop it for all of us. So if you got the shingles vaccine, you know, you were benefiting from government research that was done at the VA, the VHA, because they have the largest database, the largest amount of patients to do research with. They're doing now a genetic, a big million veteran study of the impact of genetics on health, and no other system can produce that kind of big data that benefits us all.
And just to be clear, so that people fully understand, the VHA is more similar to, let's say, the British form of healthcare delivery,
right,
than
it's
say
a, it's a national, yeah, it's a national health system. So it's much more like the successful. I mean, we're the only country in the world that industrialized country in the world that doesn't have a national health system, and it's why one of the reasons why, compared to other countries, we have such poor health outcomes, in spite of the fact that we spend more money on healthcare than anybody else.
When you're in the VHA system, you are going to see a doctor who is paid by the government, not paid through
right.
a third party to the government, I mean by the government, but literally paid by the government. They get a government check, and there's no insurance company in between or whatnot.
Absolutely. So in other words, instead of functioning in a fee-for-service system, which has huge incentives to over-treat people, because every time you give a shot or you give another round of futile chemotherapy, even though a person is dying, you get paid for it. And in the VHA, people are on salary, so there's no incentive to over-treat or under-treat. And over-treatment, we spend about I can't remember the exact figure. Maybe it's 4 out of every 10 healthcare dollars on over-treatment. That means unnecessary, harmful, futile treatment. In the VA, there's the VHA. There's no incentive to do that. There's also an incentive to give treatment that looks like it's more costly, but there's an incentive to treat people with the best treatment because you have them in your system from discharge from the military to the time they die. So, for example, there's a lot more preventive screening and health prevention in the VA because it's going to lower costs over the long term. But most insurance companies and health systems, where there's such a turnover in clientele, they don't have any incentive to really do that, because it takes a very long time for prevention to pay off, and by the time it pays off 20, 30 years later, that enrolled person is probably in somebody else's healthcare system.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. How would we measure outcomes from if you've been in that system versus, let's say, out in the private system or civilian system? Can we measure? I mean, because we can look at outcomes nation to nation, and there are certain benchmarks. Can we measure that within the context of the veteran community versus civilian community? And because we should also say that you enter into the VHA system probably with more, I don't know, necessarily more illness. Maybe you do, but certainly more propensity, I would imagine, because you've probably a certain percentage of those people have served in the military.
Well, let me step back for a minute, Sam, and say that you can't get into the VHA. You're not eligible for the VHA. Like, we have 24 million or 22 to 24 million veterans in America. Only about 9 million are enrolled in the VHA because the eligibility criteria, I believe all veterans should be allowed to be in the VA, but Congress won't give the money for that, even though they'll give the money for the wars that hurt them. And basically, in order to be eligible for VHA services, you have to have a service-connected disability and or low income or be indigent. So the VA takes care of the oldest, sickest, and poorest veterans in America, and only about 9 million are currently enrolled in the VHA. So many people think every veteran is covered. That's not true.
And so how do we measure outcomes? What would
Well, there's bazillions of measurements. There's study after study after study comparing, you know, cardiac treatment and diabetic treatment and mental health treatment and suicide and so forth. And the VA is almost invariably equal to or superior to private sector health care. For example, the famous issue of veteran suicide, although suicides in the veteran population, because it's an older population, like older populations in much of America, if there's an increasing suicide rate. If you're treated in the VHA, there's a reduced suicide rate. The VHA mental health system is arguably the only functioning mental health system in America. And, of course, more veterans have mental health problems than the civilian population. They have more PTSD, major depressive disorder. And while 70% of VHA providers give what's called evidence-based treatments to veterans with these problems, only about 30% in the private sector use evidence-based treatments. And only about 8% of private sector mental health providers have any what's called military cultural competency. In other words, they understand, you know, the problems of people who've served in the military, which are very different than the problems of people in the civilian sector.
Is there any way to measure, and I just want to ask this final question, because I think people really need to appreciate, when we talk about socialized medicine, and some people in this country talk about it as if it's literally like a horror movie. But when we talk about socialized medicine, this is a fully socialized, this is socialized medicine, period, end of story, fully government run for 9 million Americans and who have, a significant percentage of health problems, I guess, or significantly more impaired. What about the quality of the doctors? I mean, is there any way to measure that? Because
they have amazing physicians. I mean, all the physicians in the VA have, at least where there's a large medical center, they're all affiliated with a major academic medical institution like Stanford or UCSF or Boston University or, you know, Yale New Haven or whatever. I mean, they're all connected. And I have spent almost four years, researching VHA care and observing it all over the country. And I've never seen such dedicated, mission-driven people, because they're mission-driven. They're not profit-driven. And they really, really are very service-driven. And I mean, the idea that because somebody works for the government, they're not smart is a ludicrous idea that one finds only in America, you know. I mean, you have to look at the outcomes. You know, we have very poor health outcomes in this country because we have a broken healthcare system. And the VA has many problems that need to be solved, but it is definitely not broken system-wide. It has better wait times than the private sector now. It has better mental health care. It has really great outcomes for prevention and screening. It has some of the best end-of-life care in the country. It practically invented geriatrics. I mean, we have like 7,000 over 7,000 geriatricians in a country with an aging population, and the VA is an expert in geriatrics and really has some of the best geriatric training and best geriatric services that exist anywhere.
So, okay, so what, take us back to the past couple of years. There was a big, particularly during the Obama administration, a big scandal with wait times. Give us a sense of just how widespread that was and how legit the response was, or how measured the response was to the actual problem.
Right. So basically what happened was, very stupidly in my view, and this is a big problem with VA Washington National Management, right, which you have to distinguish from clinical care at the front lines. Ever since Bush came in, they've really tried to roll back by cuts in funding and by centralizing and micromanaging the front lines. They've tried to cut back a lot of advances that were made in the 90s and early 2000s in the VA to make it the best healthcare system, in my view, still with all its problems in the country. Basically what happened was they instituted a very flawed metric in throughout the system of having patients guaranteed that they wouldn't have to wait for more than 14 days for a first appointment with a physician or provider, could be a nurse practitioner, et cetera. And that is a very unrealistic metric. And there were people in places like Phoenix who outright lied about whether they were matching the metric. Now, you also have to understand, and the press has never reported this accurately, that the places where the wait time problems were the most severe, like Phoenix, were places where that had this huge sudden influx of veterans because they were either retiring there, or Phoenix, for example, has 25,000 veterans going there every winter for 3 months, you know, 3-4 months. They descend on this healthcare system. It's very hard to staff a system if you're trying to accommodate 25,000 more patients and you're saying to a nurse or doctor, oh, by the way, we can feed you for 3 months and then you're out of here, you know?
Right.
So they made really bad decisions, and they were, you know, they deserved to be fired, et cetera. But this was not a system-wide problem, but it was jumped on by the right-wing media, particularly the Koch brothers, who have funded a anti-VA phony veteran service group called the Concerned Veterans for America. And basically, they've been flogging these negative stories and paying people to exaggerate and sensationalize these negative stories for the past 4 years. And the media, in my view, is really culpable because the media doesn't provide a balanced view of the VA. The media should be covering the problems, but it never covers the successes. And that's really tragic.
Yeah, that's fascinating about Phoenix. It had never occurred to me, and I certainly never saw it reported. But yes, I would imagine that's a huge problem when you have basically a seasonal explosion of a population. You still got to support that hospital for the entire 12 months. It's not easy to just sort of ramp up for 3 months and then tell everybody see you the next snowbird season, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, would you take a job, you know, you're a reporter, if some newspaper said, you know, come to us and give up your job and give up your home for 3 months and then you're on your own? I mean, it's ridiculous, and it was never reported. And then what was reported were way exaggerations. They said that many people died. It's not, it's clear that six people died, but they died while they were waiting for an appointment, and it's not clear that they died because they were waiting for an appointment. In other words, you can have cancer and have an appointment with your oncologist and die.
Right.
You know, while you're waiting, that doesn't mean you died because you were waiting. But the media has really been terrible on this. And, you know, story after story the latest one was in the Times the other day about problems in a rural VA, you know, that has a lot to do with the fact that nobody, doctors, nurses, PTs, nobody wants to work in rural America. How do you, you know, you staff a hospital in rural America when nobody wants to come there? And here's another thing, Sam, that people don't know. The VA is legally prevented from providing market rate salaries to its staff. So if you want to work in the VA in San Francisco, you are guaranteed to be paid, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $100,000 less than you could make working in the private sector. And Congress could fix that and won't.
And, of course, the housing, if you're living in San Francisco, nobody's giving you a break because you're statutorily not allowed to make as much as your fellow, your colleagues in the private sector. All right. Well, so let me ask you this. You said that 9 million vets are in the VHA system. Where are the other, about 12, 13 million other vets?
We don't know. I mean, some of them are dependent on Medicaid. Some of them, I mean, something like 3 million are, you know, dependent on public sector, things like Medicare, Medicaid. The ACA, if they had repealed the ACA, that would have impacted something like 3 million veterans. Others are on Medicare. Others have private insurance from their employer or TRICARE. If they were more of a sort of retired career military. So there's a mix of people, and of the 9 million, this gets complicated, only about 6 million fully depend on the VA, and some of them have a mix of insurance. But the reality is that here's the really tragic thing, that the VA is a healthcare system, the VHA, and that means it provides everything from eyeglasses to hearing aids to mental health care. It is the only healthcare system in the country that delivers integrated primary care. In other words, if you have a mental health problem and you go to your VA doc and that comes up, they don't just refer you to a psychologist. They walk you down the hall and introduce you to a psychologist who's embedded on the unit and can treat you right then and there. Same is true for a pharmacist. I've sat in on hour-long pharmacy appointments where a pharmacist in a primary care unit goes over how to take your insulin or change your diet with a veteran patient. They have dietitians on the unit, social workers. That's unheard of in the private sector. Hmm. If I want to, go to a therapist, I have to find the therapist, you know, I have to make the appointment. And what they've discovered for people who have mental illness problems is often you refer them and then they never go.
Right.
All right, well, so if it
Yeah, so this is comprehensive care, and you've got people who are making sure that you're actually getting the care that you're eligible for in this context. But you mentioned some private insurance. Let's talk about Veterans Choice and TRICARE. What are those? What are their statuses? And how much do they supplement and aid the system? And how much do they are they being used as a tool to defund the system?
Well, the Veterans Choice Program, which was passed in 2014, was supposed to be a temporary 3-year program that would service veterans who had to wait more than 30 days for an appointment or had to travel more than 40 miles to get to one. And I think, you know, the VA has always paid for care in the private sector if you couldn't get care in the VA. And they have all kinds of agreements with private sector hospitals to do surgery or chemotherapy or this, that, and the other thing that they can't do in their facility. And that's always worked very well. The problem is that in 2014, Bernie Sanders introduced legislation that would have given the VA about $21 billion that it needed to fully staff and fully operate. And this was an increase that would have helped the VA deal with a lot of any problems it was having and give it more funding. The Republicans killed that bill. So the VA needed $21 billion in 2014. Republicans killed it. After the Phoenix scandal came out, they passed this choice bill. It was supposed to be temporary, and they gave the VA $10 billion for care in the private sector and $5 billion for staffing. So $10 billion that could have gone to the VA goes to private sector health care, and the VA gets $5 billion when it needs $21
billion. Right.
That means that it lacking, you know, what is it,
$16 billion,
right? And this has been the pattern that's gone on ever since. McCain then reneged on his promise that this would be a temporary program, and they've been fighting about expanding choice, doing away with any requirements, allowing veterans to go pretty much anywhere they want. And this would... And they've consistently given more money to choice than to the VA. So you have an underfunded agency, and they don't have money to hire. They have 34,000 vacancies.
Wow.
They've had 34,000 vacancies for the past 4 years. They have constant threats to their budgets. Shulkin, Secretary Shulkin, recently tried to take $1 billion away from women's health, mental health, and homeless programs.
There was a big pushback against that, and they reneged.
Fortunately.
All right, so I mean, so the dynamic here seems to be not too dissimilar from what we see as an assault on public schools. That is,
exactly.
You starve the institution of funds, and you make this concept of choice that much more attractive. And you
exactly.
use the funds to fund that choice, and it is an unvirtuous
right.
circle, I guess.
Absolutely, and then you unleash veterans, these poor, sick, old veterans who've sacrificed to serve their country, into a private sector system that the evidence shows cannot handle their problems. And, you know, many, many, many veterans live in rural areas. More veterans have substance abuse problems, mental health problems. We know for a fact that 55% of American counties, all of them rural, have no social worker, psychologist, or psychiatrist. And 77% have severe shortages. 70% of American counties. So you're going to give them a choice. What choice?
Right.
The choice is nothing, you know. They might have to wait in Vermont, for example. You might have to wait 40 days for a dermatology appointment. At the VA, you have to wait 8 months in the private sector. I mean, it's incredible, you know. There was just a story in the New York Times the other day a full section on addiction about these addiction programs that prey on addicts and people with substance abuse problems and basically set up these sober living houses which have no qualified staff. People have died in them, but they go after people that they know have good health care benefits.
Right.
If you unleash veterans into the private sector, they're going to be prime targets for these predatory healthcare, for-profit healthcare companies, and there will be no one to protect them. And it's, in my view, it's this whole privatization push is exactly what you described: starve the public system, and create problems in the public system, then blame government for failing, and then you know the private sector comes in as the great savior. But the private sector can't even save me.
What is TRICARE? Where does TRICARE fit into this?
TRICARE is an insurance company that insures, provides health care insurance to military members and some veterans. It's an insurance company. It is not a health care system.
Are they?
And that's what a lot of
are they underwritten?
People,
are they underwritten in any way by the U.S. government, or is it just
no?
Do they have a special charter, or they just happen to?
No, they just got the contract. I mean,
okay.
I quite frankly, Sam, I'm not an expert on TRICARE, but it's an insurance company. It is not a healthcare system.
So
Medicare is an insurer. It's not a healthcare system. The VA is a healthcare system.
And so, all right, so lastly, let me just ask you this in closing, because it at the end of the day, it seems like a very classic case of a privatization. And, you know, whether it's the same dynamic, whether you're talking about like trying to privatize Social Security, trying to privatize education, because there's a big pool of money there, and private capitalists want that money. Period. End of story. And their job number one is to create profit rather than results that necessarily services. And so, all right. So, how much of these challenges are were they there under the Obama administration, or I guess? And how more serious are they today? Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to put this also in the context of like these politics seem to me to be greater than even the VA and the VHA. I mean, it fits into a larger rubric.
The reason why the Koch brothers have spent millions and millions and millions of dollars fighting the VA is because they know it's a successful example of single-payer healthcare, and they want to defeat government. It's a successful example of government, and they're doing that. And you are absolutely right. I mean, fighting privatization in the VA, which I think every single one of us should do, and I think you don't have to be a veteran to be for the VA. I'm not a veteran. Nobody in my family works for the VA. Nobody in my close family is a veteran. But I have a bumper sticker on my car that says, I love my VA and save our VA. These are bumper stickers that are put out by a group called Fighting for Veterans Healthcare, which I urge all your listeners to look up on the website. And I have it on my car because the VA is mine. It's a national treasure. We've, as citizens, invested for 70 years in the VA. It's a great healthcare system. It serves us all. And we should all be fighting this privatization push because it doesn't serve the nation. And it's going to take away research, teaching, clinical models of clinical care. I mean, I didn't mention it, but the VA is one of the only healthcare systems in the country that actually delivers team-based care, where clinicians actually talk to each other face-to-face. And I think this privatization, you know, the people in Congress who are for privatization know privatization is a dirty word among veterans. And so they're constantly saying that these bills that would outsource care to the private sector aren't privatization. They are privatization.
Definition of it. Well,
they are the very definition of privatization, and we should, you know, be calling Congress and saying, you know, we don't want you to privatize the VA. You don't have to be a veteran to make that call.
Suzanne Gordon, the book is The Battle for Veterans Healthcare, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Policymaking and Patient Care. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. And if people want to see my website, it's www.suzannegordon.com.
We will put a link both to that site and the book at majority.fm. Thank you so much, Suzanne.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. Going to head into the fun half of the program today, wherein we will discuss. We got a story from Matt's hometown. Matt's really looking forward to this one, and we will talk about Steve Bannon's. I guess we're in this is like chapter three, or the, I don't know if it's the third act. It's really more the second act, I feel like, of Steve Bannon, but. Nevertheless, we will tell you the latest installment. Michelle Bachmann may rise again, ladies and gentlemen. Is it on the third day? Is it supposed to happen to Easter? I don't know when that's supposed to go. We've also have some sound clips. We'll hear from Michelle Malkin, who I didn't realize. We will also hear from Megyn Kelly, who apparently does not know what the word dog whistle means. And we will also, take a look at some Twitter. Wait, was he? Oh yeah. That's your buddy from, North Dakota. And we'll also get to I got plenty of stories that are going to be sort of both amusing and sort of disgusting. Dismusing, I guess.
Some things never change.
Folks, again, you can support the show by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. We rely on your membership. Also, justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Oh, and here's something, you know, I'm actually supposed to have a conversation about Just Coffee about this in a few days. I've mentioned in the past that the local coffee shop in Hudson, New York, where I used to go to, serves Just Coffee. In fact, the majority blend is their house blend. And I was talking to the Just Coffee people about it, and they couldn't understand how that came about. And I used to do my show up there. And so I'm talking to them. If you have a coffee shop that you think might be interested in serving Just Coffee, make a mental note, and then we'll get it, because we're going to work out some type of deal where we're going to incentivize our audience to go out and provide it wholesale.
Our house blend coffee is from a Jew.
I mean, if you're down in the South, that may be where. What did you do? Do you have like a candy cane?
A candy cane?
Something smells like mint.
There was a very strong mint smell that wafted through the studio.
Yeah, as soon as he came in.
I put on a lip balm. Yeah, is that really?
What did you say?
That's powerful.
Like a tiger bomb or
that
something.
That is powerful lip balm.
Where is Jamie? Does anybody know where Jamie is?
No.
She was traveling on her Instagram story of a while ago.
Yeah.
Wow. That is...
She did this Instagram story called In LA.
Yeah, I guess so. This is... I got to stop letting Michael do all the new employee training around here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm really impressed. I feel like Jamie's stealing my valor here.
Yeah.
I'm a little pissed off, frankly.
There you go.
I know I've taken my days, but I've never just been like, yeah, vacation, just fucking gonna keep going.
Vacation.
Wait,
arms
wait,
race.
Wait, wait. Seriously?
For maybe one day, not 2 days. What? That's 2 days.
Well, she had one day.
2 days is escalation.
No, she had one day.
This is the second day.
No, I know, but you just said you just extended, and she was coming back that day.
All right, whatever. It's fine.
Yeah, I think you weren't here the day that she told us that. Folks, 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920. You can IM us by going to the app. We haven't set up the IM capabilities on the website yet, but you pick up the app. It's free, majorityapp.com. It works on the iPhone or most Android devices. One of the things you find out when you hire somebody to build an app for Android is that there's no such thing as an app that works on all Android phones, because there's no standard. So Give us a review on iTunes. Go to majorityreview.com. That is very helpful to us. We'll be back in a moment.
C'est une poupée qui fait non. C'est une poupée qui fait non. Toute la journée, elle fait non. C'est une poupée.